Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
My gosh, I don't know what happened to Jim. It is the first Thursday of May. Welcome to the Writer's Block. I am your guest co-host, Russ Avison, along with
Bobby Jean Bell.
Hey, it's nice to be doing this with you.
It's so great to see you because, you know,
it's good to be seen.
I listen to the podcast of the shows I'm not able, you know, to get to. Well, I listen to every podcast.
Right.
You are so terrific. You and Jim are so great. I've enjoyed every show.
And you are so astute. Thank you so much for saying that. I've just been having such a ball doing this.
Isn't it fun?
It really is. And to come in tonight and take over running the board and everything, because I haven't done this for a couple of years since we had our show. Atomic Dog Radio, it's still out there. Anybody wants to listen to that? But we did that for 5 years. We had a great time.
Yeah,
radio is a fun medium.
It's very fun.
And
this
I've been told I have the perfect face for radio, so
I've been told I have a good laugh for radio.
Oh, you do. Not even for radio. It's just great. It always makes me giggle when I listen to you. So what do you got going on? You had, last time I was here, you were doing your... You had a
concert.
Big event. Yeah, but there was a big event or something.
We did. We had the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. We had the Buckaroo Bookshop. We had a concert with Sid Masters. We must have had all of that going on, you know. That's why usually when I'm not here, it's simply because I have something else happening on a Thursday night. Next, this month, our performer is Jennifer Lynn. She's a wonderful Americana Western folk singer. She sings with the New Christy Minstrels.
Oh.
And she'll be our next concert. That's the next time you'll be in here, which is May 26th.
Now, wait, I got to ask you about the New Christy Minstrels because they can't be new anymore. They got to be getting up there.
You know, it's a good question. I'll have to ask Jennifer about that.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
Randy really Sparks exciting. And uh-huh. Yeah. I think it's probably, I'm guessing that not many of the original, if any of the original members are still part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
But Jennifer has been performing with them for a while. In fact, she's on the East Coast right now performing. And
oh,
she
lives
out here.
So, well, that'll be nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we have a great show tonight, as you guys do every week. Jim is... He just decided to go AWOL tonight.
Yeah, you know, we wish him the very best. It's odd to not have him here in the studio, but, you know, I'm hoping that he's enjoying his night off.
I hope he is,
yeah.
Too. Odd not having him in the studio. He's an odd guy. So it all works out. Anyway, Bobby, why don't you introduce our guest tonight?
I'm happy to do that. Tonight we have a returning guest, John Hagenberger, who was born and raised in the heart of the heartland, Columbus, Ohio, which is where my husband, Jim, is from. And he's the author of a variety of genres, including the Stan Wade LAPI series from Black Opal Books. He's the father of three, a tennis enthusiast, a collector of silent films, which I think is fascinating, and a pop culture author, crime fighter, comedian, and been married for 45 years. So we want to welcome John Hagenberger to the Writer's Block.
Hey, John, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. I gave up on that crime fighter part, though.
But you're so good at it.
Change my resume.
Well, we welcome you back to the show. I know that you were on back in November with Jim and Russ, and I was not able to be there that night. So I'm thrilled to have an opportunity to chat with you this evening.
Oh, I'm thrilled to chat with you, Bobby.
So tell
you do have a good laugh.
Doesn't she?
Oh, thank you.
Listen, you guys just go ahead and we'll go out and get a beer or something, will we? Yeah.
So, John, what's been going on since we had you on the show last November? What's been happening?
Oh, wow. Well, I think I've published another four or five books since then, believe it or not.
That's all?
Yeah, I think we talked about this once before, but I'd saved up a lot of manuscripts over the years until I had, I guess, the guts to really sit down and write them well. So about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I got them out and started polishing them up and circulating them out. And lo and behold, I got a couple of different publishers that wanted to purchase them. And I thought, this is great. So I would give them another book, and they would take it and send me another contract. And so we're just pushing books out all over the place here lately.
Well, hey, you know, we have a caller coming in. I have a feeling it's Jim.
Hello. And circulating him out. And
Russ.
Hey. Oh, we got some feedback going on there.
Not anymore. You shouldn't have any.
There you go. Well, okay.
Turn that thing off.
There we go.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey,
welcome
hey
to the
guys.
Welcome to the Writer's Block. It's Thursday, 8 o'clock. It must be the Writer's Block.
So I just want to know, Jim.
You're the number one call-in, so you win the prize.
There we go.
Hey, Hagenberger, you're making me crazy.
I hope you're having a good time getting crazy, though.
Well, I am, actually. Actually. And I absolutely love your Stan Wade books.
Oh, thank you. I love writing.
No worries. But do me a favor, because I'm going to hang up pretty quick.
Go
ahead. Incidentally, hi, Russ. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Jim.
Yeah. Hey, Jim.
Talk a little bit about your new Western novel, because I'm really interested to hear about it. I'm going to listen to it on the air.
Okay, I'll be glad to.
All righty, okay. Jim. Hey, enjoy your night off.
Hey, guys, I will, and you guys have a great show.
We shall.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, so we are going to talk a little bit more about the Stan Wade books, because I just read Spadefall, but Jim has a great point. You have a Western coming out, I think. Is it still scheduled for May? John?
Let's see. No, it's July.
Okay.
I'm going to say the 11th.
Ah, so
It's called Bloody Wyoming. And it takes place in Montana. No, it takes place in Wyoming. It takes place in Wyoming, 1877. You probably all have heard of Medicine Bend. I'm sorry, Medicine Bow. So, at that point in time, it gives me an opportunity to, you know, I can have cowboys, I can have Indians, I can have the train coming through, I can have a little gold prospecting, I can even have the possibility of digging out some dinosaur bones. So it's just got all that stuff going on, and I'm really excited because I had never written a Western before.
Well, what was your impetus to do that? And don't tell me Jim Christina.
No, I want to work in a lot of different genres, as you know. You know, I've got 3 or 4 science fiction books out and the murder mysteries and things, but one of my goals, I guess, is to emulate a writer from the old pulp days who would jump around from Westerns to mysteries to science fiction, and it seemed to me that if you had a brain that could be able to successfully do that, you're a pretty sharp guy. At least that's what my 13-year-old mind used to think. So that was a goal, you know. So like a big, huge, long bucket list from way, way back, and doing the Western was actually part of that. And I'm halfway through a second one. I'm doing a kind of a maverick character, and the real fun for me, believe it or not, is more of a technical thing, because I was able to take a scene from Bloody Wyoming and use the very same scene, but like reverse shot from the other character's point of view in this other Western. So they're both in 1877, they're both in Medicine Bow, but you, for one brief moment in time, you're going to see a scene played out from a different perspective, depending on which book you're reading. And it's that kind of craziness that I like to put into my work.
Well, now, I know from the book that I read in the Stan Wade series that one of the things that it seems to me is you really enjoy the cameo kind of walk-on appearances. Your every page, I started writing down the names of people that were showing up, as well as inventions of the time. Like, you know, it's set in 1959, and we have a character that's enthralled with the yo-yo, and we have a slinky. And, you know, you kind of help us set the time period with a lot of this sort of ambiance that you fill the pages with. I assume that regardless of what genre you're writing in, would you say that's trademark, and we could expect to see that same kind of technique in your Westerns?
Yeah. I mean, it is the joy of writing for me in many, many cases is to be able to kind of blend fact and fiction into what we call a fraction or something. But I really like, when I was a kid, I think I saw Nicholas Meyer did the 7% Solution.
Oh, yes.
And Sherlock Holmes met Freud.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. You got a real person and, you know, and a fictional person together. I like that, you know. So many other things have been done like that since. You know, remember the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles on television where he met Lawrence of Arabia and John Ford, and every episode there was some other historical character written into the fictive adventure that he was having. And somehow that makes fiction more real for me, and makes the facts more entertaining too. So I'm a sucker for that, but I do tone it down from time to time. There aren't that many crazy walk-ons in the Elliot Cross series here set in Columbus, and I didn't do too much in the Western, although I kind of want to work in maybe Wyatt Earp if I can, or I'll be honest with you, I like the idea of having a character show up and claim to be Wyatt Earp.
Like Eleanor Roosevelt showing up.
We don't want to give anything away here.
No,
now.
I know.
Spoiler alert. I like the idea of surprising the characters in the story and hopefully the readers at the same time. Someone asked me about red herrings the other day, and I mentioned the one that you just brought up, Bobby, and said, it's not really a red herring, but I love doing that kind of stuff, playing with the fiction and playing with the readers.
Well, you know, you're, again, back to Spadefall. It opens in 1950, and you're the main character is on a movie lot and filming a stagecoach scene for what turns out to be a Republic Pictures film called Gunmen of Abilene. And I thought to myself, that's a really good name for a film. I wonder if he made that up. And then I, you know, Googled it. And, of course, it's a real film from 1950. And you had me at, you know, sentence two.
Oh, good. Well, that brings us into another area that I really love with my writing, and that's the research. I've sat on different writers' panels, and people have gotten to a question about, you know, the research. And most of the other writers will sit down and say, yeah, I do a lot of research, but then I have to, like, put it aside. I have to get rid of it. I can't, you know, I can't let it interfere with the story I want to tell. And my answer is almost the opposite. I say, no, I love doing the research, and I love sharing what I find out and all the crazy stuff that actually happened. So, in fact, at the date where that scene took place, that film was being shot.
Yes.
So I don't even put it in that the movie came out that year. I researched down to the point, well, when were they actually producing that movie?
Yeah, and it was directed by Fred Brannan, and you don't say his name, you just say director Brannan, and then it was directed by Fred C. Brannan, and it starred Alan Rocky Lane, Black Jack, and Eddie Walker. Waller.
You know, it seems to me now we could kind of have a contest and see who could research and find out all the little mistakes that might be in the research. Hey, John, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute, okay? Hang with us, please.
Yep.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Writer's Block. We are sponsored by Black Dog Publishing, by Out West, and by Target Freight Management. And we do mention Target Freight Management every show. And we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time on time? No muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today at 1-844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block. and they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did.
And Bobby will have a little special something for you if you happen to call them. Hey, John, I got to ask you, you had a book that I noticed just came out on the 29th of April, Icelinger?
Oh, Icelinger, yeah.
Yeah, you, so many books you forget. Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
What a nice setup.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sorry you didn't work with it. anyway, I happened to read that one this last week.
And, oh, great!
And
what'd you like?
I loved it. It reminded me a little bit of Bradbury had done a collection of stories together, and this collection kind of just gave me that same feel as I was reading through them. I, in particular, liked the very first story in there, the Icelinger story.
Sure.
And I think maybe because it was taking place, on the moons around Jupiter, and I think wasn't it the last series in the Space Odyssey books? It took place the moon Io. So that one got my attention. But it seems that you like to take and have a twist in every one of these stories, because I'm reading through and you expect one thing and all of a sudden it goes another direction.
Oh, that's an open-ended question. Okay. it's part of the job. I mean, you don't want to bore the readers, right? You can create a wonderful world and populate it with all the details we were talking about before and taking them on an exciting adventure, where a death-defying cliffhanger escapes, just like in that gunfight at Abilene, for instance. But it seems to me that you're obligated to do a little bit more to provide a surprise. So it's not just a circus or one of the rides at Kings Island or one of the amusement parks and stuff. You have to have a haunted house somewhere in there, and somebody has to jump out and say boo and surprise the reader to be a really good success. That's my opinion.
When you get your story though, like for example, there's one of the stories, and I don't recall the name of it in there, but it's where I think the character's name was Winston, and he was, as you find out real quickly in the story, that he was in kind of a deep freeze, but they were mm-hmm. keeping his brain active. And then you have mm-hmm. someone that was known as an angel that would come in and through a computer could communicate with his brain so to keep his brain active while they were searching for how to cure the illness that put them in this deep freeze in the first place. And as I was going through that one, I thought, okay, did you plan out the story that you knew exactly where it was going to twist to? Because it did twist. Or does it happen along the way, or do you kind of actually make an outline and figure, okay, I want to put this in, then I want to have a twist here, I want to have a twist here, and then you know the ending. But I mean, how do you kind of put the story together? I guess that's my question. Yeah.
Well, you probably heard other writers say that, you should write and rewrite, and maybe even re-rewrite, A lot of my thinking is that you should outline and re-outline and then re-outline. It makes the writing so much easier, for one thing, but in that story, I'm not 100% sure what twist you meant, but for instance, in that story, you think you're starting out with some guy like a James Bond character going to Japan chasing down some diamonds.
Sure.
And then you learn that all of that is just a fantasy that the angel is spinning out to keep this guy's brain active while he's in cold sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That could be what you meant by the twist. On the other hand, certain things happen both to the guy and to the angel toward the end of the book, and there's a bit of a switch.
Well, that was the twist. I don't want to give it away, but that was the twist at the end. I mean, it did to me. Right. I didn't expect it to go that direction.
That that came from the rewriting and the re-outlining. The story didn't have that twist in its first draft, It seemed to me like it was like a three-act play, and it didn't have a third act. It needed a third act. So I thought it through a little bit, and there are those aha moments, and that was one of them. That was a point in time where I said, oh, you know what really would be cool? You know, and I scribbled out. In fact, I don't know why exactly, but I have a tendency to, every so often I'll sit down with just a piece of paper and a pencil, and I'll just write two words down. I'll write, what if? And some of my best ideas come right after that. You know?
Interesting.
In fact, I probably would be better off just coming up with concepts and ideas, and so let somebody else write the story. You know, let me just come up with a what if, and I'll pay somebody else, you know, to turn them into a full fledged story. And I guess there's a guy in Hollywood probably does that. You know, an idea man or something.
I almost get the feeling that all the books I see James Patterson come out with, and they're always co-written with someone. I have a feeling he throws the ideas out, and here, you write this.
Well, you know, it would sound as though, even though you cross genres, that there are some things that link the books. And I'm making a reference, I'm going back to Spadefall, because kind of near the end, you make a reference to Ray Bradbury. And I knew from your you know, all of the books that you've published that Martian Chronicles, and you know, that there was some sci-fi in there, and I thought, okay, so we're gonna get a little, you know, Rod Sterling, we're gonna get a little Ray Bradbury, because these are obviously authors too that you enjoy. Who are some of the authors that you like to read?
Oh, well, you're talking about Ray Bradbury that came up and spoke to Dan when he was drunk at Hammett's party. That was pretty cool stuff. Who do I like to read? Well, you had my favorite current author on only about, a month or two ago. That's Craig Johnson. And if I've been successful and you're really, you know, reading carefully, you'll see some similar patterns in Stan Waite. Mm-hmm. The various team of characters, for instance, or maybe the gosh shucks darn Stan Waite Longmire kind of personality blended into both of those books. But other guys that I really like, Dick Locke, I don't know if you Mark Coggins.
Okay.
And I always pronounce his name wrong, but it's Paul Capricose, I think. He was writing with Cussler for a while, and he has a nice detective series set on the East Coast.
Very cool. So,
how about science fiction writers?
Yeah, I think I just rattled off a bunch of private eye writers in that box.
Yeah.
Science fiction writers, the classics. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of my books is called The Last Martian Chronicles. Doesn't that sound a little bit like Ray Bradbury?
Yeah, I think I've heard one similar.
Yeah, a little bit And I remember reading that book actually as a kid and being absolutely fascinated. And I don't read a lot of science fiction, but I couldn't put that book down. Now, I also want to ask you, I have to look at my list of questions. What do you like best about writing? And do you like writing the dialogue? Do you like character development? What do you just get really, you know, humming about when you're in the zone?
Good question. I think you stumped him.
Yeah. Can we go to commercial now? It's all good. I mean, it's almost like I'm sitting here thinking the reverse. Like, what part don't I like?
Well, that wouldn't be my next question.
Oh, there you go. Let's go to the
radio interviews.
What don't I like? I like the snappy, fun dialogue. I like the action scenes. Everybody's always told me, hey, you write good action scenes, you know. I like the Raymond Chandler poetic turn of phrase in the descriptions, for instance. What's that leave? I mean, we've got dialogue, we've got...
you know, this is a perfect segue. John, would you read us a little something?
Oh, sure, I'll be glad to. Now, I'll be reading live worldwide, right? That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. It is still my foolish heart.
Live from the writer's block.
When would you like to? You want to do that now?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Okay, sure. Well, you brought up the beginning of Spadefall. How about I do a couple pages of that?
Or a page, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me set the stage just a little bit. Most of the Stan Wade books, and that's Stan Wade, not Sam Spade.
Right.
Most of those books are taking place in 1959. And for the first time in Spadefall, our character is flashing back to 1950. And the reason is that that was his first case when he was just out of college, still working, as you mentioned, Bobby, as a kind of a stuntman. All the stories, of course, take place in L.A., so that's where the Hollywood stuntman angle comes in. In any event, this story begins in 1950, so there's a little bit of a break from the standard 1959 storyline, but then we snap back into it pretty quickly. So if you don't mind, yeah, I'll go ahead and read two or three pages here.
Go ahead.
Okay?
Sure.
All right. Chapter 1. Los Angeles, January 9, 1950. The damn horse kept jostling and bouncing away from me. My sore right shoulder began screaming at every impact. I was supposed to slip from the saddle and grab hold of the side of the stagecoach as it sped up the moderate incline. But from the start, I knew my position was wrong, and I wasn't going to make it once again. Now, on my third attempt, the director fumed like a volcano. The coach's left back wheel hit a rock in the trail, and the makeshift handle I wanted to grasp jolted up 2 inches higher. I didn't have even half a chance. My body twisted out of the saddle, and I somersaulted into the dust, trying to tumble away from my injured shoulder. I failed again. Rolling and skidding to a stop, I knew I'd have to do it all over again. Otherwise, Director Brannon would can me on the spot, and Tom Steele would replace me in Gunman of Abilene. A bolt of pain shot up my right arm again. I'd fallen on the same deltoid that I'd smashed and slammed last week during a fight with Van Sickle in chapter number something or other of the King of the Rocket Men. I took my time coming to my knees and wobbling to my feet. My thumb got caught in the gun belt, and I almost went over for a second time. In the distance, beyond the camera truck, the horse that I had been riding turned its head, nickering at my fate. I reminded myself of the stuntman's creed. Pain is temporary. Film is forever. Nevertheless, I still got fired. I hated getting fired, but at least I got paid. If only in quarters, since that's all the payroll department had on hand the next morning. In many ways, Republic was still a cheap studio. However, I didn't let it bother me because I'd gotten the one call that I always wanted. I was going to work as a private eye in a real investigation agency downtown. Things were looking up for Stan D. Wade. I finally had a chance to succeed at my chosen field. I was going to be an ace detective. My life was an all-time high, and I had 25 bucks worth of quarters rattling in my pockets. Chink, chink, chink. November 22, 1959. Chink, chink, chink. My life was at an all-time low. I looked down at a note scribbled on the back of an old invoice. Cindy, the Brown Derby's bookkeeper accountant, had written and slid it under my door. It read, "Lex is in the hospital again for intensive radiation treatments. She's going to need more money." Norman ambled into my office at the back of the Brown Derby, shifting a slinky from palm to palm. Shink, shink. "Come on, they're giving these things away for free out here." For over 3 months now, the restaurant had been celebrating its 30th anniversary. When they give something away, I gripped and licked the flap of an envelope containing a follow-up bill to Rod Serling for expenses on a recent case, it's always free, by definition. Norm ignored my fussy editorial comment. Shink, shink. "I wonder if I could make this toy into some kind of perpetual motion machine." If anyone could, my lanky buddy Norman Warwick was the guy. He'd once constructed a zap gun from Boris Karloff's walking stick in a French metro station. Shink, shink. "You coming, Mr. Wade?" "In a minute. Go ahead, I'll be there." Damn. And Lexa told me the other day that she was getting better. I should have noticed that she was putting me on. Some ace detective I was. There was another note from Cindy. I'd gotten another call yesterday from someone named Alan Smithy. How's that?
That is great. That was John Hagenberger reading from the book Spadefall. We loved it.
Thank you for allowing me to do that.
That was awesome, John. Hey, we're going to take one more little break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Good deal.
Listening to The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. This is Russ and Bobby Jean, and we're here in the studio with our call-in guest from Columbus, Ohio, author John Hagenberger, and we're having a wonderful time. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
Hey, John, I was going to tell you, I didn't mention about Eislinger, but one thing that was, there was a movie and a book that both came to mind when I was reading some of the scenes where they were out on that hostile moon surface. One of them was The Martian, and the other one was why did it just escape me with Bruce Willis?
Andromeda something?
No. I had it right on the tip of my tongue. Where they went to the asteroid to try and blow it up before it crashed into the Earth. It was Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck.
Yeah, that's what I thought the name of that movie was, Andromeda something.
No. Why did that just go? I'll think of it in a minute.
Well, I know the movie you mean, but Russ, that story was written like in 1988.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I hope you got a lot of money for it then.
if you look at the last page, I think there's a quick little blurb that tells you that when it was published and where.
What was the most recent story out of the collection there?
Oh, gee, the most recent one. You know, I have to go fetch the book and flip through it.
Yeah, we were talking earlier before we went on the air, and I mentioned that one of them I know was fairly recent because you made some discussion about social media in it, and obviously that hasn't been around too long.
Yeah, there's a blend of some of the golden oldies and some of the... I'm not looking in the right book. Martian Chronicles?
No.
Eislinger.
Oh, I'm in the wrong book.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's okay. I mentioned Martian Chronicles earlier, so.
I don't have an Eislinger in front of me, so I'm trying to remember exactly what the contents were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's, gosh.
Well, that's okay. We're not trying to stump
Howard
you.
Howard Coe is in there. I wrote that and read that at a pulp convention last August, yeah. I believe that one's in there. That's the horror story about the living toe.
Oh, yes. But let me ask you this. Go ahead, please.
My favorite in there is The Boar's Kill-Off, which is another.
Yes. And I like the title. That made me chuckle when I first looked at it. How many of these stories do you, when you make a collection, do you go back and actually tune them up, rewrite them, freshen them up, whatever it is you might do?
Not much freshening up at all. The real taste is whether I can stomach or swallow them after all these years, kind of a thing. If we pass that test, then the book would take that story.
Do you go back and reread every one that you're going to put into the collection?
Sure. Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Sometimes there is some stuff that dates it, but I kind of wince at that and let it go by. You know.
Is it anything like, I know that there's times when I've done shows that I absolutely do not want to go back and listen to, and there's other ones that I'll listen to and actually I'll enjoy listening to them again. How is that with you when you reread your stories?
Well, you're just seeing the ones that passed muster. I mean,
but how do you feel as you read them?
Aren't in there, and there aren't going to be in there,
right?
Kind of thing. So yeah, I too have trunk stories that belong in the trunk. And they'll stay in the trunk. Besides, I'd rather be focusing on what's exciting me currently more than the reprints, I guess, and thinking about what I want to do in the next Dan Wade novel, for instance, is a lot more fun, and I guess it fits more in with the overall development of the series and the brand and that sort of thing. So the collecting the science fiction stories together are a sometimes project. I have three of those books out now. I take it back. I've got another series that are coming out. I think I mentioned this before, Triple I, the first private eye agency on Mars. That's a trilogy, and that'll come out starting maybe in December.
Wow.
The first book will come out on that, and then throughout next year. But those two are stories that I began many, many years ago. I had to update. So maybe I'm answering your question after all, Russ. With science fiction, you cannot just expect that you could put out a story today based on what we knew of the world 30 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. It would fall very flat. I mean, you would have characters walking around not aware of things like cell phones or DNA. It's like watching the old Star Trek original TV series. You know,
yeah.
They're entertaining,
yeah.
But, ye God, that's not a future that really might ever happen. You know, it's fantasy land. So I do have to do upgrades and things on those when I read them. Good point.
John, I want to, we're kind of moving along. It's a little bit of a segue, but I'd like to talk a little bit about your writing process, because one of the things that we love to share here is advice for writers. Can you describe your writing day for us? Do you write every day, or how do you discipline yourself?
It's a mess.
Well, you just described our show here, yes.
Okay.
It works, okay? I mean, and yet we get there. I can't tell you really that I have a standard process. I do, on the days that I write, I almost always write at least 4 pages, and many times more. And then there are days where I write nothing. Like, I didn't write anything today. Today was a day where I was busy on, I don't know, I think I was doing some marketing on one book and promoting another book and outlining another book, and maybe I wrote a couple of paragraphs for that Western I was telling you about. So I can't give you a lot of good advice, except you should write every day, and as Stephen King says, you should read every night.
Okay, that's great. And, yeah. Of course, even though you didn't write today, it sounds like it was still a working day for a working writer, that you were working on promoting and, you know. And all of your books have been picked up by publishers. You're not self-published. How did you find your publishers?
Well, I like to help people out with that, too, but there's no real magic way for that either. You have to get to the point where you have faith in your work enough that you send it out, and if you've achieved that, you have to just keep sending it out. And I think that there's a larger market now than there ever was in the history of print, since Gutenberg, I guess. So you have a very good chance of getting your book accepted, at least by a small press. And if not, then you could self-publish, I guess, through things like Amazon, and get a book and a cover and put it all together and get it printed up and be able to sign copies and really feel like you've achieved something. So what a world. You know, I would definitely not hesitate to send things out.
Why do you think that the market is so much better now and that there's so much more opportunity than ever before?
Probably the one word would be the electronic market that has become available. People are now reading on their pads or on their phones or on their laptops, although that's a little awkward. But in addition, you know, they're reading the good, solid, hard book. Plus, I think nothing ever has really changed in this fundamental, foundational desire for people to have a story told to them or that they could read or consume in one manner or another. I know that there are a lot of bookstores that are going through some tough times because of the electronic. But on the other hand, as a reader or as a consumer, there's more stuff available. There's so much stuff available that you could never, I think, ever read every book that you wanted to.
Right.
So, and there's always new stuff coming all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Absolutely, there is. And so there's kind of a push now, too, for the audio book, which is so fun to have you have read aloud to us tonight, because oftentimes, you know, reading it is very different than listening to it. So that was great fun. We have to ask this question. Do you ever get writer's block?
I think I answered that already.
Well, for our new listeners.
Okay. No, I don't get writer's block. I get writer's shock.
I love that. And what do you mean by that?
When I'm writing a story and all of a sudden I say to myself, oh, that's why I named him that. Or that's why he's a plumber. Or there's something in the back of my brain that says, do this and do this. And I go, okay. And later on in the story, I go, oh, that's great. No wonder they couldn't figure out who the killer was, you know. So that shocks the heck out of me, you know. And that's what I think of as writer's shock. And makes me keep coming back for more. I'm hooked.
We love to ask that question, and everybody's answer is so different.
I know.
Yeah. Let's see. Do you
want to hear about the future?
Do you want to hear about who?
The future.
Sure. Tell us about the future.
There's another Stan Wade coming out in August 6th. Superfall, the one I've been building.
Superfall. All right.
Superfall. They all start with S.
They all start with S and end with fall, right?
Oh yeah. You're taking the fall.
And yeah,
you need
what's
a fall guy?
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
What else have I got that's new? Well, you knew about Ice Slinger, so I can't really get excited about that.
I got excited about it. You should promote that one, because for people who don't know your work, it's such a different collection. I mean, you go from science fiction to, you know, I think you've got one story in there that has a detective back in the 50s, in fact. And then there's the one story takes place in your home state of Ohio, and it moves around. It's quite fun.
Right, that's the Unhappy Trails, yeah.
So there's a little bit of West in everything, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm a child of the 50s, and it shows, and I'm a child of pop media. There's all sorts of references to those walk-on characters in the Stan Waits, but he's also reading the funnies in the paper and turning on the TV and listening to the radio and watching the movies, and that's me, you know, vicariously, and that's probably why his stories are all set there in Hollywood, because that's the media capital of the world, and it just all comes together in that place and in that time for me, and I thought that's where I would like to have my character live and run around, you know.
John, this has been so much fun. Tell our audience how they can follow you and find you and such.
Okay, well, I'm on Facebook. You should just be able to type my name in, and you'll find my page. There's the Stan Wade page, too. You could type his name in.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Stan Wade.
What else? Let's see. I've got a website, and it's, www, and then it's johnhagenberger.com, and that's all one word. So it's my first name, J-O-H-N, and no spaces, and H-E-G-E-N-B-E-R. GER.com. And I'm on the other stuff, you know, Twitter. I think I got a, is it Printist? Printrest? I don't know. There's another.
Oh, Pinterest.
Oh, Pinterest. Pinterest.
Yeah, and
yep.
Tumblr.
Yep.
And I mean, Tumblr. I don't do a lot on some of those other ones. I mostly do everything on Facebook, my website, and Twitter.
Well, we hope that you will post on the Writer's Block Facebook page. Every time you post something on one of your personal Facebook pages, please bring it on over to the Writer's Block so we can keep track of everything you have going on, especially as new things get published or you're making author appearances. We just think the world of you. It has been so much fun. We have loved reading you, loved chatting with you, and we look forward to hearing more from you.
Oh, this is great. You guys are super. I love the show. As you know, I listen pretty regularly, and to be on it is a big thrill for me, and I really appreciate those kind words. It makes not just my day, it makes probably the rest of the month.
Oh, we love that.
It's only the 5th.
John, thanks so much for joining us, and you have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.
Super, Russ. You take care.
Happy trails.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.
Boy, our phones are busy. I think we have another call coming in.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Is this Joanne by any chance?
Yes, this is Joanne, and I'm also here with the producer and an actor who's in the play because we're both on break for 5 minutes. So it's Ryan Lahetta and it's Joanne Barron, and we're here together.
Welcome to the Writer's Block. We're so happy to have you. Joanne, tell us what's going on.
Well, there's this marvelous play called Love from a Stone, and Ryan Lahetta is a very gifted actor who did the scene for me. I watched him do the scene, one scene, and I said to him, why don't you go get the rights for this play? And he's such a go-to guy that he went and he found this Tommy Nohilly and got the rights. And 4 years later, we're doing the play May 5th to May 22nd at the Electric Lodge in Venice. And we're very excited. Ethan Hawke won the Obie for it in New York.
Yeah, it's quite a thrill going from, you know, like being tutored by the master and then working with her. It's, you know, it's been quite a ride.
That's so sweet of him to say, but he's turned out to be a great partner. You know, sometimes students can be like Halle Berry and Robin Wright and Ryan, and you can end up acting with them and producing with them, and it's just fun as hell.
We're so happy to have you with us tonight. This is Joanne Barron, five-time dramalogue, winner, actress, producer, and artistic director of the Barron Brown Acting Studio. And we're talking about a play that opens, I guess, officially Friday night. Would that be right?
May 7th.
May
7th. Is that Friday?
I think it is.
It is.
Blood from a Stone. Can you tell us a little bit about the play?
The play is semi-autobiographical. And it's a wild ride that is both hilarious and emotionally deep and raw about a family in New Britain, Connecticut that's falling apart. And as they're falling apart, their actual physical home is. So our set is quite a thing to behold with leaky things and rain falling through the ceiling and all kinds of exciting things that Ryan has created because he's also a civil engineer.
And this is... this is in Venice, and very quickly, I'm just going to give a reservation number, 323-960-7788. You've got a great website for the play, which is simple, BFAS, which stands for Blood From a Stone Play.com. And Joanne, we had a couple questions for you. Let's see. What are challenges of presenting a play, this West Coast premiere, that originally premiered in New York? What are some?
Well, you know, the challenge is the play itself is so brilliant and so deep and so imaginative that you needed to find really gifted actors. And we're just blessed. We started with Ryan. We have the Emmy Award winner, Chad Brannon. We have a brilliant actor named Gareth Williams, who is a fellow who starred on The Shield and on Gilmore Girls. We've got a fantastic set of gals, Frankie Iglesias, who is currently starring in a series with William Hurt and Billy Bob Thornton, and the lovely Josera Gennaro, who was starred on the soap Passions. It's very gifted group of actors. And so that's the first thing, get great actors. And the second thing is have a shoestring budget and create a very challenging, complex set where the house can fall apart as you live in it.
that reminds me of skin of our teeth with the houses at sixes and sevens at some scene, and it all sort of falls down.
It reminds me of my house at home.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it reminds me of my house at home. Yeah. do you believe that you have an advantage over other actors since you are also a highly looked upon acting coach?
You know, I feel that when you act, the child part of you acts. And when you teach or coach, the adult part of you. So they're two different parts of me. I'm like any actor. I love taking direction. I love being part of an artistic family. I love being treated and part of a group. There is no sense of me being more than. I am just a colleague with people when I'm acting. It's more vulnerable. Everybody gets scared when they act. Everybody wants approval, so I'm really no different than any other actor. I just work hard and hope that I, you know, do the roles I do justice.
What do you think is the appeal of this particular play, Blood from a Stone?
Well, for me, I saw it in New York 3 times, and I couldn't stop laughing and crying at the same time. I just thought it was brilliant. I love the wild, raw, edgy violence and the humor and the surprising depth of the characters. There's not one part in the play that isn't brilliant.
Oh, my gosh, we have to get tickets.
Oh, you really do have to get tickets. It is truly my belief but this is one of the great plays. I mean, it was up for an Outer Circle Drama Award. It won the Obie for Ethan. I mean, I just thought it was wild. I loved it.
Yeah, and this is the playwright's first production. This is his first play he's written.
And it's semi-autobiographical or autobiographical period, however you want to say it, whatever he'll live with. And and it's deep and real.
We're so
I also worked with the director, Thomas C. Dunn, and was starting a movie with Wes Bentley for him. That's how I met him, called The Ungodly. And then when we did this play, I thought, you know, he's a playwright, not only a director of film, and he's a director of plays. And then we hired him, and Ryan and I just think he's brilliant. Thomas C. Dunn, just amazing job, I think, with the actors, right, Ryan?
Oh, absolutely. Thomas is an actor's director.
Yes. He's
absolutely.
An actor's director. Totally.
We are so happy that you were able to find a few minutes between scenes to give us a call tonight. We've been on the air almost a year, and we are all about the written word. You are the first folks to come on that represent playwriting and acting, and we'd love to see be representing that more. So we really look forward to knowing more about what you're involved with down the road, and we really wish you all, well, we'll tell you to break a leg as you get this production officially open on Friday night. And we, once again, reservations for Blood from a Stone at the Electric Lodge Theater in Venice, 323-960-7788. Don't be a stranger.
I won't be. And look up Joanne Baron, D.W. Brown Acting Studio. A lot of the wonderful talent, directors, writers, and producers come out of the school that we go on to make many great projects with. It's a great, great artistic place, too. And please be our guest at this production. We would love for you to you know, witness to this event.
Thank you so much. We know that you probably are going back on set in a few moments, and our time this evening is winding down. We were just delighted to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much.
You are an absolute joy. It was a pleasure with both Brian and Monica.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for everything. God bless. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay.
What a full hour. Wow.
I know.
From Columbus to Venice.
You made me laugh because you said, well, we've been on the air for about a year, and I'm thinking, we are so tired.
Yeah, but we are coming up to our first anniversary.
I know. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, it was very exciting.
I've been so excited to be just a part of this whole
thing.
This
is so much fun tonight, Russ. It was really great to have this time with you.
Thank you. Same here as well. And I will probably see you in another... I don't know, 6 months when Jim decides to take the day off again?
I think we're doing a show all together in June.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't know if I want to do it with Jim again. If it's just you, I'll be here.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us tonight on The Writer's Block. Check us out on Facebook, The Writer's Block Radio Show, for all the latest and the link to tonight's podcast.
All right. You all have a great night. Thank you for joining us on The Writer's Block.